We did take a big hiatus with Pesach, but we're glad to be back. And the truth is that tonight we're really going to do the end of Parshas Noach and a transition into the beginning of Parshas Lech Lecha. As in years past, I don't go into the spring season knowing exactly how long the shiur will last, but some point up to or maybe even a little bit into June would be the goal. So I don't know, figure out, I don't anticipate being away any of those weeks. So hopefully we'll have uninterrupted shiurim. I don't know when Shavuos falls out and the like, but for the most part we have at least 6, 7, 8 more shiurim, something like that, and hopefully we'll be able to not only finish Noach today, but get...
Friday Shavuos.
Yeah.
Excellent. So we will hopefully make some headway into Parshas Noach, and in the beginning, of course, of the life and times of Avram. You know, Bereishis, to the extent that there's a human hero, we of course have Adam. Noach is Noach, and then of course Lech Lecha begins the parshas about Abraham, and it's really at the end of Noach. It's not we sometimes think that we're introduced to Noach, to Abraham in Lech Lecha. We get to know him in Lech Lecha. Hashem first speaks to him in Lech Lecha. We're actually first introduced to Abraham at the end of Parshas Noach, and the psukim that we'll see today are really, I guess there's no other way to say it other than just to say truthfully, you know, this is not the exciting part of Parshas Noach. The excitement is what we've been studying for over a year, and that was, of course, all of the great and fascinating and challenging story of the flood, and then even in the aftermath of the flood, and even Migdal Bovel, which was the last three shurim we had before Pesach. And then the end of this parak really is a transition, the end of the parak and the end of the parsha is really a transition from the generation of Noach to the generation of Avram in the life and times of Avram. And it's really the end of this parak, which is, if you will, the bookkeeping of the various generations. So we're not going to read the entire parak, you know, 25 psukim or something, and all the genealogies, but we'll see some of the highlights, and of course we'll also see some themes that emerge, some interesting diukim and discussions of the psukim, as well as the last group of sources, which are really, as I said, the transition to Avram. So the story of the door of the Migdal Bovel ended at the end of Pasuk Tes. We're in Perek Yud Aleph, and we finished the first 9 psukim were the story of Migdal Bovel. So that's where we left off. So we are now up to Pasuk Yud. Pasuk Yud, as I said, is that transition from the generation of Noah to the generation of Avram. And the Pasuk tells us, specifically going through the line of shame, Ela Toldos Shame. These are the descendants, or story of the life of times of the family of Shem. Shem ben Ma'as Shana. Shem was 100 years. The Yolad S. Arpachshad. When he gave birth to Arpachshad, Shenatayim Acher, 2 years after Hamabel of the flood. So we kind of start right after the flood. 2 years later, he had the son. Now the truth is, we've seen lineage before, including of Shem, and we know that he had other children. But of course, here the focus is specifically on one particular line from Shem, and of course we can anticipate why that is, and we'll see some of the commentaries who point that out. And then again, after this, we're told about the life of Arpachshad, Pasuk Yud Beis. He lived 530 years, and he gave birth to somebody named Shelach. After that, we're told how much more he lived. Pasuk Yud Daled, we talked about how Shelach Chai Shloshim Shana. He had been living 30 years when he gave birth to Aver. And then Aver, again, Pasuk Tezayin, with the next generation, he lived 430 years. And then he gave birth to somebody named Peleg. Then we see Pasuk Yud Ches, Peleg, when he was 30 years old, he gave birth to, he fathered Reu, another generation. Then you see Peleg lived 209 years. After that, so he died at 239. What's striking, of course, about that is it's a lot shorter than we're used to. The name Peleg, Palga, is basically half of what used to be the lifespan of people. Then we learn about this fellow named Reu, Pasuk Chaf, and how he lived now in this shorter 200 year or so lifespan. And in Pasuk Chaf Aleph, he gave birth to Sarug. Then we see about Saru's life. He lived another 200 plus years, Pasachav Gimel, and he gave birth to Nahor. Then Pasachav Dalad is already now getting into familiar territory. Pasachav Dalad, we hear about Nahor living when he was 29. Who did he give birth to? Terach. Terach, of course, we know Avram's father. In other words, Nachor was Avram's grandfather. We then hear about the rest of Nachor's life, Pasuk Chavav, we hear about, finally, Terach, and how when he was 70 years old, Pasuk Chavav, Yoleh et Avram, he gives birth to Avram, Ves Nachor, Ves Haran. He has three children of his own, one of whom being Avram, Nachor, and Haran. There's a debate whether Avram was really the oldest or not, because in different citations he's sometimes mentioned first, sometimes not. But either way, that doesn't strike me as that important either way. But Avram was one, of course, of his three children. Chav Zayin, Ela told us Terach. And then we hear again a summary of his life, that he was the father of Avram, Nachor, and Haran. And then we are told one final thing beyond Avram. We, of course, Avram's famous nephew, Haran, Holid Es Lot. So that's one thing that's for the first time in the whole list we hear about anybody who's not a direct line. Obviously, it's foreshadowing what we already know, is that Lot, unlike everyone else in the last 10 generations that was just summarized, is actually going to be a player. He's going to be relevant to the story. So we already need to know who is this guy Lot when we're going to meet him later on in Bereishis. And then the next pasuk before Maftir is quite tragic. But Yamas Haran al Pnei Terach, that Haran died in the presence of his father Terach of Eretz Malaratov or Kazim in their hometown. And you know, you could see, you know, it doesn't matter who and it doesn't matter when, a child predeceasing his parents is, of course, a great tragedy for any family. And apparently there was tragedy in Avraham's childhood, in Avraham's lifetime. His brother died at a premature age. And, of course, unfortunately, his father, Terach, had to bury his own son. Pasuk Chavtes, Hikach Avraham, Nochor, Lechem, Nashim. Avraham and Nochor, the two remaining sons, surviving sons, each one took wives. And here we're introduced to another, of course, important heroine of our history. And Avram's wife was Sarai, Shem Eshes Nachor Milkah, Ben Haran Avi Milkah, Avi Yiska. Then finally, we turn the page, or at least in my Chumash we turn the page, and we hear, and your Chumash too, Pasuk Lamed, again an important theme which we know is going to be resonant later in Parshas Bereishis, in Sefer Bereishis and in Lech Lecha, Padi Sarai Akara, Eila Vlad. The Sarah, this is the first example. We know, of course, other Imahos follow. Sarah was barren. She could not have children. And of course, the reason it's hard to tell us this is because we're wondering why at this point we don't automatically go into an Avraham Holid Es. The answer is because it was kind of an automatic thing for 10 generations, including Avraham's own birth. But obviously, it wasn't going to be so simple with Avraham and Sarah. Pasuk Lamed Aleph, Vikach Terach, Es Avraham Benov, Es Lot, Ben Haran. And then we hear something very interesting, which we're going to have to pick up on next week. Again, two things that are sometimes a misconception, because we all, to one extent or another, fall asleep at the end of Parshas Noach, literally and figuratively, because the action's over. And then we're all excited about the action that begins at Lech Lecha. But there's two things that we sometimes forget. Number one is that we already met Avraham, so to speak, now. And number two is, we often think, and this is going to be the debate, but you'll see why it's not so clear necessarily, that Avraham began his journey to the Eretz Canaan next week. Lech Lecha, go, and Avraham went on a journey. We'll have to, when we learn that next week, we'll have to keep in mind what we're about to read, Pasuk Lamed Aleph, that apparently he was already in the journey because his father started going. And we don't know why his father started going. But what's going on? Obviously, we're going to have to figure that out next week. Yigach Terach as Avram Beno. Terach gathered the Mishpacha, Avram, one son, as Lot Ben Haran, his grandson, who's now fatherless. So again, Terach is the grandfather who's almost acting like a surrogate father to his grandson, Lot. The Esa Sarai Kalaso, and of course the daughter-in-law Sarai, Eshes Avram, Beno, the Yetzu Itami or Kazdim Lalechet Arza Canaan, and they're going to Canaan. They weren't just traveling Stam. They were going to Canaan. They were going to the Holy Land. They go at Haran, but for some reason they got to Haran, and they stopped there. And then that's all we're told. That Terach's life was 205 years. Yamas Terach v'Haran. So they never made it, like many people over the generations who were on their way to the Holy Land, including some great tzaddikim. They made it only some way, and then they got waylaid and eventually passed away premature to their destination. Ad Khan?
Interesting. Terach didn't take his other son with him.
Yeah, we have to see. Yeah, why that should be the case is not 100% clear at all. That's right. Very good. So that's basically the brief. We're going to do 20-something psukim today. We've done them. We just saw the end of the book.
Yeah.
You know?
say very fascinating. I never appreciated this. Shame outlives Abram. If you add the chronology, both Shame and Aver outlived Abraham.
Really?
Yeah. According to this, Abraham died in 2123, and Shame died in 2158.
Well, I guess it makes sense. I guess also, yeah, we don't... Right, exactly, because Abram is part of the, was born into the world when people were living only 200 years.
Right.
How many years did Abram live? What does it say there?
175.
Right, not even 200.
Right.
It's also worth noting, of course, in light of today's anniversary, that Abram was born, according to Seder Olam, in the year 1948. So how many years ago was that he was born? How many years ago? In what year of the world was he created? Does it say one of these artificial things? What year of human history was he born? Does it say? Actually,
no.
Abram. Oh, here we go.
1948.
I'm sorry. So it's 57. So do the math. 5769 minus 1948 is.
Without
a, you guys are accountants.
What did you say?
5769. 3800 years. Okay, so about 3800 years ago, this year. That's not. I can't say today. This year, Abram was born, and 61 years ago today, the state of Israel was born. Okay. Certainly, I don't know if it means anything, but even if it doesn't, it's quite a coincidence. Okay. So let's go back now to some of the points I want to highlight. Two large points, so to speak, for the shiur. Again, obviously a paragraph like this is a little bit of a challenge to find some interesting things to delve deeper in. And the truth is, if you take a look, if you have Makros Gedolos, or any of you have a Chumash with commentaries, there's very little commentary. You're not going to be surprised on these 20 or so psukim. Very, very little commentary, even from Rashi, let alone from some of the other commentators. But I did look, and we did find there is some discussion. So first of all, right away in Pasuk Yud, which is the beginning of this whole list of chronology, really it begs the question, as I alluded to, which is that we already know the chronology, because we've already met these people. Maybe not Avraham, but certainly basic photos of Shame and the like. This is not new. We saw that in the previous parak. So the Radak, if you take a look at the first verse on your sheet, the Radak is the one who asks the question first, which is, you know, really, what is going on? Why are we repeating this whole chronology? It's not like it's so scintillating. You know, if you repeat it, the flood story, okay, you know, sometimes, I never cease to be amazed that my kids, like Yosef, who's of the age, I mean, Aaron is of the age now, he could watch the same Barney video 30 times. So for him, this is unbelievably interesting. So he could watch it 30 times. So something that's really interesting, we could be repeated. But you know, the chronology, like it was once. Okay, you had to get it in the record once. Why are we having it repeated? So the Radak asks this question, and he says the following. Va'afal pi shezachar toldos shame lama'ala im toldos echav. Shame is a major player from a long time ago. Right? Shame is famous already. And we already discussed his toldos with his brothers. Who were his brothers? Cham and Yafes, right? Good, another test. Right? The children of Noach, right? Noach's children. So he's been a star from a while back. Why all of a sudden now do we have them again? Shana Osamu, they're repeated now. Masader had told us Mimeno at Avram Avinu. He's just background now. But we're reorienting ourselves to focus not just on chronology for the sake of chronology, or chronology for the sake of knowing Noach's family tree, which is really the first goal. Now it's how do we get to Avram? Lefichach lo zachar mibnei shame el Arpachshad, and that's why even though he had other sons, only the great grandfather of Avram, Arpachshad, is mentioned. Lefishmi toldosov yatsa Avram Ravino. We're not looking for an exhaustive. This is not, you know, one of these new search engines, you know, Jenny Search or something, where you could find your family tree and your multiple generations. This is not to know the generations of Noach or Shem. This was only a hechatimsa, only a way of getting to where does Avraham come from. Sometimes you see this with great people, you know, where there'll be a family tree, but the focus will be going up, not down. Whereas the focus is actually not where you came from, which is usually the family tree, but, you know, from the lower one going up. In essence, says Radak, that was going on here. And really what Radak has in mind, and if you did the math, simple math, we saw 10 generations. This is actually alluded to, and again, it's very symmetrical, and clearly it's not a coincidence, and we've seen the first half of this Mishnah previously when we started with Noach, and now we see the second half of the very famous Mishnah in the fifth parak of Pirkei Avos, where the Mishnah tells us, Asar daras mi adam ad Noach, and we saw this previously, you know, a year plus ago when we started Parshas Noach. So there were 10 generations from Adam into Noach. And why were there 10 generations? After all, and here I would impute into the Mishnah's question the famous observation by, I'm not sure who, or maybe it's by more than one person, but there's a whole theory of history that, in essence, that history is the study of the biography of great men, or women, as the case may be. In other words, what we care about in history are the major events. The major events are always done by a small handful of significant people. You can learn all about the 20th century by knowing the biography of less than 10 people, probably. You would know, in essence, every significant event. So in essence, the way I read this Mishnah is basically asking that question. We care about Adam, that's important. We care about Noah, that was important. Why did we have to wait 10 generations? You know, if it is what it is, but God can control the world, it's a yo-yo, he could have gone up and gone down, so why did he wait 10 generations? So the Mishnah answers its own question, in essence, by telling us, Lahodia kam erech apayim lefanav, to see how patient and compassionate God can be. Shekol adoros hayomach isin ubain, all these generations in between Adam and Noach were doing terrible, rebellious things, and yet God was forbearing. Ad shehevi aleihem es me'amabel. Eventually, showing sight, tigi hazman, Hashem could wait no longer. The rebellion got so terrible. Eventually, but it wasn't like it was never bad until then. Hashem was, you know, like the ultimate parent, you know, keeping giving the kid a second chance, and a third chance, and a fourth chance, and it shows God's, in that sense, compassion. And now, what's relevant for us? Asaradoros. Similarly, again, clearly it's not a coincidence. Similarly, there was also from 1 to 2, and now from 2 to 3 in the highlight of humanity, Asar Daros, 10 generations, mi Noach ad Avraham, from Noach until Avraham. Lo dia kam erech apayim lefanav. Similarly, to again see God's compassion and forbearance. But here, what's interesting is the Mishnah gives a different and more enigmatic explanation, if you will, of in what sense is this God's compassion that he waited 10 generations from Noach to Avram. So says the Mishnah, Shekol hadaros hayumach isin uba, and they were all so terrible. But again, now, if it would be completely parallel, we would have expected the Mishnah to conclude with, and therefore God, you know, held off doing some great punishment to humanity, just like he held off, but the answer is, but that can't be, because there is no great punishment to humanity. Right? Remember the rainbow? Right? It's not going to happen again. So what's the parallel to the first part of the Mishnah? Here the Mishnah concludes, Acheba Avraham v'kibel alav schar kulam. Until Avraham finally came 10 generations later, how do you translate the last part of the Mishnah? He got all of their schar. So most of the Mefarshim, understand it literally as you just suggested. And in fact, as an example of that, take a look at the Bar Tanura. Says the Bar Tanura, Kibel Alav Schar Kulam, Osam Ma'asim Tovim. Avram was so awesome, so great. He did so many good things. Keneged Mashai Rashi Ya'asu Kulam. He did enough good deeds in his long lifetime to make up for what could have been done in the 9 generations that preceded him. Lefichach Nitzolu Kulam Bizchuso. Since God knew Avram was coming down the pike, that redeemed and enabled God's compassion to allow those 9 generations to survive. Because it's all worth it, in God's eyes, even if it was so bad, to get to Avram Avinu. Ukumo shenata alav ol mitzvos b'olam hazeh, keneged kulam. And just like Avram accepted a life of mitzvos, clearly a midrashic idea, you're not going to find that in the psukim anywhere, but an idea which we have in other midrashim, that Avram accepted a life of mitzvos in some sense, even in this world. And obviously he did that in despite the fact that no one else had done it before him. Kach kibol b'olam haba, schar keneged kulam. As the Mishnah says, he got all the reward for everybody. So had God been not such an erech apayim, not such a patient guy, so 1, 2 generations at most, he would have gotten all upset. And again, tohu vavohu, or whatever, he would have done. But we see God's compassion. Not only did he hold off, but he didn't destroy the world at all. And he held off and was able to look at the big picture, so to speak. You know, when we're angry, we just look at what's in front of us. Right? We can't sometimes take, you know, that's really the important thing of having a cooler head. You still might be upset, and you still might end up doing whatever you might have done in anger. But the benefit, of course, of taking a step back and cooling down is that you can see the bigger picture. And more often than not, you actually decide, if you do that, will decide, reach a different conclusion about what to do in the near, even in the immediate future, because you can look and see a big picture. So Rabbi Shalom was an Erech HaPayim, says Rabbi Bartanura. He was able to see the big picture, even though people were, in a sense, provoking him, one generation after another, but Hashem kept a cool head, and he was able to look at the future and say, you know what, Avram's going to come from this, let me not do something so prematurely.
This is theologically very difficult. I mean, what happened to the idea of Shechar Onesh for each generation, and why only at that time in history? Why doesn't Hashem do this in other times in history? Why doesn't he...
I was going to say, my answer to you would be, this is certainly a complicated thing, but I would say, I would disagree with you on both fronts. Namely, who said that they didn't get rewarded and punished? Or just because Hashem didn't destroy the world, or, you know, you forgive me, you know, through a proverbial hissy fit, that doesn't mean that they weren't punished in some way. Who knows how they were punished in this world or the next?
I mean, not destroyed.
Exactly, number one. And number two is, who said that Hashem's... We say in Yugam Midos, Hashem is a Kel Erech HaPayim. We know that because Moshe said it, and we incorporate that into the Yogim Amidos of Rachamim. But the Mishnah is telling us that that notion was already known to the world, or God wanted to make that notion known to the world by this. Now, if you want to talk about something that's even more interesting theologically, Alan, though, I thought you were anticipating the next comment, which I just saw today. I never knew. This idea of the Bartanura, I could have given you 10 other Mepharshim who all more or less say the same thing. That's a simple understanding of the Mishnah. I just decided on a lark while I was making up the source sheet. I have a shelf just a Pirkei of a Sforno. One of the ones that I have is the Sforno. The Sforno on Pirkei Avos, which was not well known for many years, it was in a very obscure version, a volume. And I think it was in the 70s, Mossad Rav Kook published Kisei Rav Avadya Sforno, which included in his general writings this. And the copy I have, to be perfectly honest with you, is an art scroll version, which was published more recently by Rabbi Ralph Palkowitz, the legendary Rav and the father of David Palkowitz, who published some of the stuff on the Sforno on Chumash too, but it includes the Hebrew, Rabbi Palkowitz's translation, and then some explanatory notes on the bottom. So that's the copy of Hebrew that I have, let alone English. So take a look at the Sforno. He says something different than all the other commentaries. See if you can pick up on it. Says the Sforno, what does it mean that God waited 10 generations for Abraham in order to, quote, what was the language of the Mishnah? Kibel alav schar kulam. So the Bartanura and others said it meant that Abraham got the schar of everybody else. Says the Sforno, kibel hu yizbarach schar v'toeles v'nachas ruach lafanav kolkach. What is he saying? Hashem got the reward. Now again, it doesn't mean reward in some literal sense, obviously. He's given it to himself. But in essence, when we make good decisions, we benefit ourselves. We can reward ourselves, so to speak, with good decisions. By having discipline, looking at the big picture, being patient, etc., in the big over time, we can enhance our own lives, give ourselves, in a certain sense, reward ourselves. Says the Sforno, that's what's being alluded to here. Because he didn't just, again, you forgive, it wasn't like just impetuous, a tantrum, God saying, that's it, I'm done with you. And he was able to have the discipline and the patience to wait for Avram. He gave himself great nachas. And he gave himself great reward. She'ilu haya kol echad mehadaros osa chelik me'asara me'osa nachas ruas lahaya oved. The fact that we don't know anything or care about anyone else other than Avram from these 10 generations, that's because they didn't even do one-tenth of what he had done. In other words, what does Hashem want? And this is a theological point which we have other sources for. But this is clearly what's coming out of the Sforno. What Hashem wants is for us to do good things. The reward, the schar, the nachas, if you will, that God gets is when people are doing good things and living a moral life. God's not expecting everybody to be a superhero. If people had just done 10% of what Avram had done, Hashem would have gotten nachas from them, and they would have been valuable in and of themselves, and they would have had a progeny which would have been relevant to human history. But they didn't even do that. And as a result, God was getting no nachas. So sometimes when you get no nachas, you're ready to slam the door. But Hashem had patience and forbearance, and he waited, and he waited, and he waited, and as a result of, you know, being patient, he got an Avram Avinu, who made all the waiting worthwhile. He got so much nachas from Avram, so much reward and pleasure from Avram, that it made the wait worthwhile. The Kara Zahanachas Ruach schar. And the Torah uses the term reward. And the reward is a synonym for this type of nachas that Hashem got. Al derech, as the pasuk says in Devarim, ki chalak Hashem amo, that Hashem's portion was with his people. When the people are doing good, it's like a parent. What else do you want in life? You just want nachas from the kids. Everything else is details. If you get nachas from the kids, you're happy. And if not, it's a difficult thing. So to hear, says the Sforno, Hashem got the reward by waiting for Avraham. As opposed to had he prematurely, and maybe even justifiably, shut everything down until then, it might have been justifiable that he would have robbed himself of the nachas of Avraham. What a fascinating shot. Yes?
Yeah, the only thing is that it seems that it's hard to understand, according to the Sforno, why Avraham seems to be a lump instead of a singular something to do with Avraham, instead of the Kigo.
He know, because he got, that's what he tried. Again, I'm not saying it's not a little, maybe it's not perfectly glot in the words. Could be, but what he's trying to say, and maybe I wasn't clear enough, he is trying to touch that as well. Namely, he got all, the schar he got from Avraham was equivalent to what he could have gotten from everyone. That's how much schar, how much nachas he got from Avraham. It was schar kulam. Is that each one of them had just done a little bit like a normal person, not a superhero, that would add up in 10 generations to what he actually got just from the one Avraham. Again, you see this, I don't know how many times you see something this dramatic, but it's only theoretically possible, and I think I even may know a family or two like this, where, you know, wonderful, nice, fine people, but for whatever reason, you know, one child is a little bit difficult, and they have, they persevere, and they have, then sometimes it could even really be like this, like the youngest child, and you see it on their face, it was all worth it. And I love all the children, but maybe they haven't been getting the nachas from the other children. But the younger child, it makes all the perseverance worthwhile. Says this Sforno, that's what happened to Hashem. With all the pain and aggravation he got for the first 9 generations after Noach, it was all worthwhile when he got the nachas from Avraham. What a fascinating idea. Okay. One more point, once we're on the Sforno, we'll switch back now to the Sforno's commentary on Chumash. And the Sforno, in the next pasuk Yud Aleph, so here, the Sforno notes something very interesting, which you would get extra credit forever in my book if you would notice this on your own, because I certainly wouldn't have remembered it. Namely, that we, as I said, in the previous perek, we also had a genealogy. What's striking about the previous genealogies, as opposed to everything we read until now, is that it never says anything about anyone dying here. The previous generations say, Vayechi Vayemus, Vayechi Vayemus. Says the Sforno, there's no death here. We are told he lived 200 years, 600 years, so we can figure out that he eventually died. But there's never a Vayemos. Huh?
That fits so well with what he said before.
You mean, well, let's finish to see what he says here, and then you'll tell me what you think. So it says this Forno, the next source on your sheet, right before the bracketed bays. Lo hizkir b'shum echad me'ela asaradaros Vayemos. How come in these 10 generations it never says anyone died, even though we know, of course, they did? K'moshe hizkir b'osam asaradaros shemi adma noach. In the other 10 generations, which is the parallel, it does say people died. Here it doesn't say they died. Says the Sforno, so interesting. It relates a little bit to my biography theory of history. Or not my theory. It's a famous theory. Ki heim kula mesu kodem sha'inyan asipur ha'mechuvan az v'amabu. Because in that period of history, from Adam to Noach, there was one big event. The flood. If you live, you know, it's, again, take any in many people's lifetime, especially some of the people here in your generation, Kennedy's assassination, the Challenger, 9/11 for certainly people in my generation and many others. You know, there's a certain event that's what's going to define the time. If you weren't around for that event, that's just filler time. The epoch was defined by the event. Says the Sforno, those 10 generations from Adam and Noach, it was all filler. There's only one event that's important for human history, the flood. Why does the Torah tell us about these individual people who died? Because it's more than just saying they died in some physical sense. It's basically saying they missed it. They didn't miss it. They missed it. None of them were alive for that event. Now, they might not even have survived the event. That's a different point. But they weren't even, they didn't make it to the historic moment. Aval Elu, he says, and this relates to the point Alan made before about the long life that these people had in the previous generations leading up to Noach. These 9 generations, the people lived so long, there was obviously a lot of overlap. People were, you know, people had Uru Inaklach. You had a lot of great, 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 great grandchildren. You were living for a long time in those days. They all lived, all 10 of these generations, even the first guy we started with, Shane, and Arpachshad, they lived to at least see some of the historic event of these 10 generations. If the historic event of the 10 generations preceding them was the flood, what is the historic event of these 10 generations? The birth of Avram.
And it's true, actually. If you take a look at chronology, every one of these generations
is living in 1948.
Except
the one who pre-decides. Yeah, but exactly. But he.
Now even Peleg was in 1996. He died. every one of them.
Okay, so let's just finish the thought. The who and what? And what is the big historic event? Fourth line, Hishtadlus Avram Avinu, Yosef Mikol Tadiki Adar Shilafanav Likra B'Shem Hashem Ladiyelv Ne'adum Grosav Kor Harav Achusol Ulamashram. Thank you. Ba'avosos Ahavas Chesed LaAvdo, to schlep them, to drag them. Ba'avosos, what is that? Right. Or even almost like chains, bonds. Avosos Ahava is a term the Chazon Ish used to use, how we have to bring back our fellow Jews by Avosos Ahava with bonds of love.
From
Holland. Yeah. That was a favorite phrase of the Chazon Ish. Avosos Ahava. Anyway, so Avram, again, he wasn't the only tzaddik, we've seen this previously, there were other tzaddikim before Noach, but no one else made the impact on human history the way Avram had. So to be alive when Avram was born was to have been alive for history. All of these people did it. And therefore, in that sense, their legacy lives on forever. And therefore, it doesn't say Avamos. Of course, literally, physically, they died. But we subtly highlight that by not mentioning Avamos. Okay. Another little point, before we see our last big point, is the Radak here from... Now, you'll see, I skip all the way to Pasuk Zayin. There's like almost no commentary for the next 15 Pesukim. And then at the end of the paragraph, there's a little bit more Pesukim. What happens in Pasuk of Zion? Take a look. Ela Todos Terach. Now we focus again on Terach, Avram, Nachor, Haran, and then Haran holded as Lot. Says the Radak. Again, if you remember, this Radak goes perfectly with the Radak we saw on top of the sheet. The first Radak said, what's the purpose of this whole Perek? Don't we know this information already? Says this Radak, more even sharper, but in the same vein. The previous Pasuk, look at Chavav. We were told who the three children of Terach are. In Chavav and Chav Zayin, it's repetitive. He had three children. Chav Zayin, he had three children. What's added is that, and he had a grandson called Lot. So just tell me, if it's important, we should know Lot. Have a much shorter pasuk. Say he had a grandson called Lot. Why repeat the same three children that he just said in the previous pasuk? Right, that's Radak's question. Far Zachram b'pasuk shelafonav. You don't have to go back a parak or two. The previous pasuk said the exact same thing. The whole Sifel told us Lot. All we get to hear about now is told us Lot. That Lot was born. So why does it tell us all this? Elabal lizkor hakoros shakaruhu ki gam heim yikru toldos. Einachinami, he says. The word toldos can mean two things, as we've seen. It can mean descendants, or it can mean legacy or events of life in his life. The first pasuk chavav was telling us a genealogical tree. Who are his children? These are his three children. But now we're not repeating his children. We're now moving on to an important theme or storyline. The storyline of that Nebuch, he lost a son in his lifetime, and he ended up being a father figure to his grandson, Lot. That's not a genealogical fact. We don't get into that typically. Nephews, grandchildren, who cares? That somebody died in his lifetime? Maybe there's probably lots of tragedy we just skipped over in 10 generations. We think it was all happy, hunky-dory for 10 generations. I'm sure there's lots of tragedy. But that wasn't mentioned. We're not just doing genealogy here. This told us, Chav Zayin says Radak, is already now part of the storyline. And now we want to find out, we're setting the stage, of course, for the star, Avram. Namely, we want to know what happened to the children, Avram being one of them, of Terach. That's part of the story. And what are we told? Who most b'no b'chayav, the idea that Nebuch, he lost a child in his lifetime, but say so mi or kazim, him on his trip on the way to Canaan, which he never makes, umos b'charan, death of Charan. So I just thought that was an interesting observation, because if we had been reading this book more slowly, I think many of you would have been bothered, why are we repeating it? And the only person I saw even noticed it was the Radak. And this is his explanation. Okay, we have 10-15 minutes left. And I want to share with you the famous Medrash. I don't know how many of you have ever seen it inside. You learned about it maybe in first grade, but you didn't see it inside in first grade, that's for sure. And that is the famous Medrash of Avram and the idols. Why is that relevant? Because it comes up in Rashi right here. Take a look at Rashi. Which Rashi is it? Pasuk Chavches. Chavches tells us that Haran, the son, Avram's brother, died apnei Terach Aviv. Now we thought it meant in front of, which is, again, it's a tragic image. A son dying in front of his father. Look at Rashi. So Rashi says, B'chai Aviv. Simple understanding, it's in his lifetime. Fine. Okay, tragic. But then he says there's a Medrash. Medrash Agoda Omer, not just in his life of his father, but that his father was responsible. His father was culpable. Al Yidei Aviv Meis. His father's own, we'll call it for now, mistake, without a further adjective, his father's mistake and error in his ways is what led to the death of his own son. Even more tragic. Now, what's that referring to? How did he cause his own son's demise? So you get a paraphrased version in Rashi, but let's see the original in your source sheet. This is the sets the stage for the famous Medrash about Avram. The Medrash quotes, again, as I said, the Pasuk, Rabbi Chia Bar Berei, a lot of Medrash Rabbah is in Hebrew. For whatever reason, this one seems to be in a different language, Aramaic, but I'll read it slowly for you. Rabbi Chia Bar Berei de Rav Ada, Diapo, from Yapo, tells us the following. Terach Obed Slimehaya. Maybe you never heard. Terach was an idol businessman. He had a business, wholesale, retail. He sold idols. Chadzman Nafik La'atar. One day he had to go on a business trip. So he said to his son, Hoshiv Lahavra Mocher Tachtav, you mind the store while I'm on the road. Have Asi Bar Inish by the Yasbin. Some man came in and said, I want to buy an idol. So Avram is a good salesman. He starts making conversation with him. Hu amar lei, bar kama shanin at? How old are you? Prospective customer. Hu v'hava amar lei, bar chamishin. So he said 50, 60, whatever. He gave the age. Here's where Avram switches from salesman to soldier of God. Instead of saying, oh, you know, that's, you know, this idol will be great for you. A man your age, you're so distinguished. You need this idol. Avram instead says, he said to him, Vai lei lahu gavra, woe is it to such a man, to have a bar shisin, he's a 60-year-old, you know, mature man, uboy lemisgad lebar yome, and he's going to bow down to some idol that was just made today. You know, how foolish is he? And what did the customer do? Have a misbayish. He was humiliated, embarrassed, and didn't make the sale. He left. So, Avram the salesman is 0-1. Avram the kira worker is 1-1. Chadzman subsequently, Asachat Itata. There was a woman, a lady came in. Teina b'yadei chada pinach desolas. She had a plate or a bowl filled with flour. Amrale, she says to Avram, Heilach krav kod mihun. I want to feed, I want to serve the idols. Can you give this flour to the idols? Put it in front of them. So what did Avram do? Put on his kira worker's hat. Kam nasiv b'kulsa b'yadei. He took, I guess she left. It doesn't seem like she witnessed the whole thing, but the manager doesn't say. But I guess she left. Once she left, instead of, you know, going through this ridiculousness of the flour, what did he do? He took like an axe or something like that. In his hands, the tavrehon lekulu b'sila. He broke all of the idols. And then he left the one big one, v'yav b'kulsa, b'yadei d'rabba d'hava b'neon. But the one big one, the biggest one in the store that he left over, he put that axe in his hand. Kevan d'asa avuha, when his father eventually returned from the road, you know, wanted to see how, and if Avram's got a future in the business, or am I going to have to send him to law school? You know, does he have a business future or not? Amar lei, oh my gosh, man avid lohun kedin, what happened here? What did you do? So Avram, you know, very innocently, with a straight face, tells him, well, Dad, you got to see. Amr lei, us is chada itata. One woman came, tina lachada pinach lasola. She had his bowl or plate of flour. Amr lei, helach krib kadmeon. And she asked me to feed the flour to the idols. And I did what she asked. Krivas the kadmeon, habadain. Amr ana ichol kadmai. I put it in front of them. But what happened? One of the idols said, I want to eat first. Another one said, Anechol Kadmai, right? It's like a bunch of kids, you know, in sleepaway camp or something, you know, they're all arguing for the food. Come Hadain Rabba, and the big guy, the bully in the group, Tava Bineon, the biggest one there, Nasa Vakulsa Batavrinun, and he took the axe and he killed them all, so broke them all, so now he could eat the flour. This Avram stand with a straight face to his father. Amr Lay, his father says to Ma'at, my father, what are you ridiculing me? He says, are you making fun of me? You treat me like such, you think I'm a fool? Yadin Enu, you don't think I know that that's impossible? You think I think that could happen? So Avram's got him exactly where he wants him. Amr Lay, you know, he's a good prosecutor attorney. You know, he led his father right into the trap, and his father fell for it. Amr Lay, Avram says to him, "V'lo yishmu aznecha ma'ashapicha omer, do you not hear what you're saying? You worship idols, and yet you admit that it's ridiculous." Now, I don't know about you, but for me, when I was in first grade, that's all I ever heard about the Medrash. What I didn't remember hearing, and maybe my teacher told me and I just forgot, so let me be more fair. What I never remembered was the next point, which is the key. Nasve umasre l'nimrod. We have also all heard about the rest of this Medrash, about Avram in the fiery furnace, which we're going to get to. How did he get to the fiery furnace? Says the Medrash, his father turned him in. Instead of his father saying, okay, Taki, you're making a good point, or, you know, I don't want... It's not enough that his father just got upset at him. His father took him to Nimrod, the king, and said, "This is my son's a troublemaker. Take care of him." Right, but again, if you, it's one thing to take your son to the Rosh Hashiva and say, "My son's not learning well. Can you help us?" It's another thing when you know the Rosh Hashiva is going to kill your kid. But his father did. Terach did that. Can you imagine? Amarlei. So, what did Nimrod do? He wanted to force them. Nasko the Nora. You know, they worship the sun. Fire, one of the others was a similar koach to them. You bow down. Amalei Avram, Venasko Lamaya, the Matfedara. Why should I bow down to the fire? It's like Chadgadja. This is like a Chadgadja now. The water can extinguish the fire. Amalei Nimrod, fine. Nasko Lamaya, bow down to the water. Amalei Mke Nasko Lanana, the Tain Maya. So Avram says, well, if I'm going to bow down to the water, I might as well down to the clouds. The clouds are what make the water. Says Nimrod, Nasko Lanana. Okay, great. Bow down to the clouds. I should bow down to the wind because wind is more powerful than the clouds. The wind can move the clouds. Okay, so he says, good, bow down to the clouds. A bit, but down to the wind. And then Avram says back to him, basically what he's saying, listen, every human's got wind too. Should I bow down to a human? So at that point, even Nimrod's patience is worn thin. Amarlei, milin at mishtai, ani ein mishtach ve'alor. Listen, I worship fire. You know, I gave you 10 chances. Now we're going to start with what I like. I like the fire. Hari ani mashlichacha betocho. I'm going to throw you into the fire, into the furnace. V'yovo elokosh at mishtach ve'alor v'yatzlicha imeno. Whatever God you think you bow down to, let him go save you from my God. Hava taman aran ka'im palu. Right? Meanwhile, the whole time Haran was there. Now, again, maybe he came just because the family came to watch the brother get cooked, or he just snuck, or his father was scared, nervous about him too. You know, if one son's off the derech, maybe the second son's off the derech. I'm not sure why Haran was there, but Haran's watching the whole thing, and Haran says the Medrash was on the fence. You know, Avram Taka makes a lot of sense. You know, I'm not as invested in my father and his idol thing. You know, I'm young, I'm rebellious. You know, my father's an idol worshiper, so I want to be from. You know how it works. My father would be from. I don't want to be an idol worshiper. So he's, but then again, he's scared of Nimrod. He's on the fence. Omar, he said to himself, Manavshach, I can go either way. Im nisech Avram, ana Amar mind Avram ana. If Avram comes out alive, I'll say I'm with him. Im nisech Nimrod, and if Nimrod kills him, you better believe I'm going to say ana Amar Nimrod ana. I'm with Nimrod. What happened? Came short Avram l'kivshon aish v'nitzol. Of course, we know the miracle. God went into Avram went into the fire and he survives. Amr lay deman at, and then afterwards Nimrod turned to Aaron and said, "Nope. So whose side are you on?" He said, "Hey, if it worked for Avram, works for me." Amr l'hon min Avram ana. Ich bin an Avramer, you know, not a Berliner, but an Avramer. I'm with Avram. Yeah. That's I was with him all along. Okay, not Luhu, he grabbed him, he shlechu or he threw him into the furnace, but God made no miracles for him. Benach maru b'nei meyav, his insides were scorched. V'yotza, he was able to somehow stumble out of the furnace. V'yamas al p'nei terachaviv, and he died in his father's arms. Ahudasiv, and that's the pasuk's allusion to V'yamas haran al p'nei terach. So it's actually not a bad thing. We're running out of time. I'm not going to be able to do the rest of the sources. I'm going to save the Ramban and the Sfasemis for next week, and I'll put that with note with Lech Lecha sources. But I want to leave you with just a citation of the Rambam. And I want to mention the following point to you. This is a fantastic, wild, extravagant medrash. Slightly different versions of it. The Rambam himself seems to have different. I want to point out the following. Very bekitzer. The big debate in general, the Rambam and Mor Nevuchim lists basically three attitudes that you could have, that scholars have had over the years, to Agada, to Midrashim, to these wild stories, and Gemara, and Chumash, etc. And as a general rule, the Rambam of all people, Mr. Rationalist, is known to ridicule, not just to disagree, but to ridicule those people who think that they're frum, and these are, without the Yiddish, that's exactly the words that the Rambam uses, they think that they're frum by believing Midrashim literally, when really they make Chazal look foolish. They make us look like completely unsophisticated people by thinking that we should project that our greatest rabbis believed in such an Arshkeit. That's the Rambam's general attitude. He says they're really parables. They're expressing deep philosophical thoughts couched in the language of parables. As a general rule, the Rambam does not take these types of midrashim literally. With that background in mind, it has always been to me profoundly striking that the Rambam takes this midrash as a historical truth. Not just literal, but as a historical truth. The Rambam assumes that this is absolutely true, and where the Rambam in the beginning of his Laws of Avodah Zarah, the Rambam gives you a 3 or 4 paragraph history of monotheism, and he goes through a lot of details both before Avram and in Avram's lifetime, which are not relevant for us. Had we had the time, I would have read it for you. It's all there in front of you. But the underlying point here is the key point. As the Rambam here is giving you the history of monotheism, the Rambam tells you where I've underlined. After discussing Avram being this powerful, you know, gadfly, if you will, you know, against City Hall, they're all worshiping idols, and Avram is the one who keeps on causing trouble, and he's having some success, apparently. Avram polemically won the day. His father had no answer for him. So what do you do when you have no answer? Either you have the humility and the courage to admit you're wrong, or you throw a tantrum. Terach threw a tantrum, and even tried to have his own son killed. Bikesh HaMelech, Nimrod, Lahargo, wanted to kill him. And he was able to survive and then go run away to Haran. So the Rambam is clearly assuming that's not in the Chumash anywhere. What Nes? What miracle? What king? None of that's in the Chumash. The Rambam, again, whatever slight thing, and there are different versions of these Midrashim. So I think there's different versions of was Avram 3 years old when he found God, or 40. Usually we're taught 3. The Rambam thought it was 40. But either way, this idea of this astounding, you know, extraordinary life, this larger than life biography of Avram, especially in his formative years, taking on all comers, coming to belief in God by himself, even standing up to the king, and then as a result, miraculously surviving something, says the Rambam, that's a historical fact. Now, Rambam's not the only person who believes it, obviously. But my point is, it's all the more striking that it's the Rambam of all people, who doesn't always take Midrashim like this literally. This he clearly does. What we'll pick up with next week, is the Ramban cites the Ibn Ezra, even though we don't have it in our Ibn Ezra, that the Ibn Ezra doesn't buy any of this medrash. Not so much because it's crazy or it's too out of, because it's not in the Chumash. You think it's too important that if it was true, it should have been in the Chumash. So the Ramban is going to try to justify it. That's where the Sfasemis comes from, and that'll also be a segue into the opening sources of Parshas Lech Lecha. See you next week. Welcome back.